Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Logan Gordon along with you. Coming to you live from our Sportsnet 960 downtown studios in beautiful, still sunny Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Lots to chat about on this Wednesday. The Flames are 3-0 for the first time since 2010. There's massive injury news across the NHL. Toronto Raptors officially tip off their season tonight. Oh, and we have arena news as well. Ton to get to on the show. The fan feedback line is always open to you here on Sportsnet 960, 960-960. I didn't even mention we got a Stamps report with Maddie as we get closer to the Calgary Stampeders and the Saskatchewan Roughriders on Saturday night in Regina. Big news from Saskatchewan. Mason Fine will get the start for the Riders. Turns out that Cody Fajardo, maybe it wasn't just a vet day yesterday at Riders practice. Maybe he wasn't just sitting it out and getting a maintenance day. Turns out the Riders want to look at some of their other quarterback options during what's been a pretty dismal season for them. They will host the Grey Cup this year, and right now their chances of getting there look pretty bleak. But we'll dive into that a little bit later with Matt Rose and our Stampeders report. We'll kick the program off like we always do, take a look back at last night, and hit up some Flames storylines with our pal Peter Labardius. He is our Flames insider, and he's brought to you by the Gemini Group Home Renovations. Your home renovation should be a reflection of who you are. Give your home the Gemini difference. Gemini Group now offering air miles, reward miles. Visit GeminiGroup.ca. Good afternoon, Mr. Labardius. How are you, sir?
How are you?
I'm doing good, thank you. How are you?
I'm fantastic.
That's good.
Beautiful
to hear.
Day again. I think our weather's going to turn by weekend, but yeah, I'm trying to soak it all in, and great hockey game last night, lots of twists and turns and great storylines, and just want to take a second to thank everyone who was kind enough to reach out. And all I wanted to do last night, Kelly Rudy and Rick Ball are truly one of the best duos. We're very, very lucky to have them on the TV side here in Calgary, but special shout out to Harnarayan Singh, who made me feel very comfortable. And I don't know, I kind of felt a little like a kid at a candy store last night. It was fun to be back in that booth again for the first time in a long, long time, and the game and everything that went with it was a lot of fun. So thank you to everyone who was kind enough to reach out.
You know what? I want to pull back the curtain on it a little bit, because I know so many people are interested and curious. You know, what goes into it for you? Is it a big difference for you going on the TV side of things compared to your regular spot on Flames Radio?
Yeah, it's a massive difference, because, on the radio side, Derek and I have worked together for 9 years now. You're working with somebody you've never worked with before, so that's different. Although, as I said, Harnarayan made that very, very easy. But what you don't have, Logan, on the radio is you don't have somebody talking in your ear all the time, telling you what elements are coming next, what to look for. And, you know, I've always had incredible admiration for the best guys who do it, and I've had a chance to work with Ray Ferraro and Pierre Maguire and John Garrett, and had a great partner many years ago, and in Charlie Simmer, and, you know, one of my best buddies, a guy I think who should be a full-time guy in the booth, and that's my dear friend Sam Cosentino, because he does a tremendous job. So, you know, I know how difficult that position is, because the big difference is, Logan, and I want to thank the Sportsnet team, whether it's Lonnie Corrigal, especially Scott Lennox, who really, the tremendous producer, kind of walked me through everything last night. But, you know, the best color analysts on television, A, provide insight, but, you know, they kind of, in their own way, control the show, because they see things. You know, you're always in constant communication with the producer and, you know, the director to say, here's what I see, here's what I like. If we get a chance, Can we go there? And then things are always changing. You know, you might have something planned, but then a better chance comes up by the time you get to the whistle. So it was a fun challenge. I really, really enjoyed it. Very, very thankful for the opportunity, and whether I ever get a chance to do it again or not, doesn't matter. I've always wondered what it was like to do that job on television, and I really enjoyed it and want to thank everybody who, you know, Ryan Leslie, my buddy, and everybody who just made me feel so comfortable in a somewhat foreign chair.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you had a great experience, Lou. We knew that you'd kill it, as you always do here on Flames Radio. So glad that you had that experience. And I obviously was busy last night, but and there were nothing but great reports, even on the text line today. There's plenty of people that were very happy to hear your voice on the TV side of things. So congratulations, my friend. And let's dive into a bit of what we saw last night at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. Firsthand from that TV booth, the Flames with a 3-2 win over the Vegas Golden Knights. It looked a little bit different than their first two wins, facing a little bit of adversity from a good Vegas team, but the Flames were able to rebound and pick up a win.
I think the best teams in any sport handle difficult situations really well, and I've just, with the new personnel and the types of people that the Flames have brought in, it's an older group. It's a group that carries itself with great maturity. And I thought that showed again last night. And so, you know, they did get down 2-0. And the biggest point in the game for me, Logan, was the Elias Lindholm goal that was called back on goaltender interference in the second period. If you're not mature and it doesn't, you know, put you in the right frame, that could be a turning point that you don't recover from. But instead, it actually, I thought, fueled the Flames' fire. And in many ways, I thought Elias Lindholm, after that happened, you know, got a terrific level. Everybody jumped on board. The Flames got terrific contribution right throughout their lineup. And in the last two periods at times against a very, very good team. Now, listen, when you're on the power play six times in a row in a period, you should be a dominant team. However, you still need to score on the power play. But, you know, besides the turning point and how things happened, it's always, for me, Logan, how it happened. And such an important group last night was the Rooney line with Lucic and Richie. We talk a lot about leaving the next group in better shape, and that line, Brett Ritchie draws three penalties on his own. Ryan Huska said today, chatting for the coaches in the media room, that he doesn't remember seeing that happen since minor hockey. That line was fabulous. They were terrific in game one. They were a major role player, I thought, Saturday in Edmonton. So there was a lot to like after a tough first goal and a 2-0 setback.
And here's the head coach, Daryl Sutter, speaking to the media last night when asked about the contributions of his fourth line. He thought that when they lead to power play goals like that, maybe it should lead to something on the stat sheet for his fourth line.
Assists on power play goals, they should announce them guys assists because they carried the guys that were on the power play for the first half of the game.
It's hard to argue. It's absolutely hard to argue, and their work was incredibly important. It was funny, Brett Ritchie, you'll probably hear it later in the day with Pat. You know, we scrummed him today. You know, asked him about Daryl's comments, and, you know, he made a funny remark about, well, I hope they keep this in mind for PP3 time as the season goes along. It does take players playing their roles, accepting their roles, and going about their business and giving you great professional minutes. And that's exactly what those players are doing. And for the most part, just about everyone in the lineup, especially in the last couple of periods.
We've talked lots about the first line coming into the game last night. They obviously get a lot of chances on that first power play unit, adding in a guy like Nazem Kadri. What did you think of the Flames' special teams, especially the power play, Lou, in that second period? Kind of seemed like once they got a couple of chances, that I think you were right on, after that Lindholm goal gets called back, they really found their stride and were really determined to find a way back into that game.
Well, they were, and in so many cases over the years, you know, and last night was another example. I thought right from the get-go, the Lindholm line, you know, was starting to find some good things. You think about the stop that Logan Thompson, and by the way, if he wasn't one of the best players in the game last night, I think I missed something. I thought he was a mass. I might have named him first star, and that's not to take a poke at anyone or anything in that regard. I just thought he was brilliant. So they started to find it, and Logan, you've heard this a lot from me over the years. Good power plays can feed guys 5-on-5, too. They start feeling better about themselves, good puck touches, and, you know, it really got them going, I thought, as far as the rest of the game was concerned. Didn't even really have a chance to mention it down the stretch on television last night, but there was a little shake-up in the top two groups, if you want to call them the top two groups, down the stretch, with some interchangeable winger situations. Power play was excellent. I think it's going to continue to be a really big staple of this team. And what I've really enjoyed about it, obviously when you add somebody like Huberdeau and somebody like Kadri, and the big takeaway for me, outside of, you know, having great skill level everywhere on that power play, is retrievals. I just think that group has shown all five guys, when it is loose, they are more than willing to go get it and get it back. Retrievals are a very underestimated part of why power plays are successful. And I'm not taking a shot at anybody in the past, because every time you say something good about this group, it's like you're saying something bad about other people. I'm not. I'm just recognizing the fact that, you know, and I would say that about this whole group of forwards now, too. And we saw a lot of it last night. Logan, who isn't hungry to get the puck back amongst that forward group? And it certainly, I think, is paying big dividends on the power play. Both units, in fact, not just the one.
And the one thing that Ryan Huska pointed out on the coach's show last night, Lou, that I think you'll agree with, too, their ability to win the faceoff on the beginning of power plays was key last night and will be a huge factor for them going forward. A couple, I think it was on the, let's say it was on the Toffoli goal. It was a bit of a scramble draw, but they still wind up getting possession of the puck, and it's led to those chances.
And that ties both things in, right? Because it's one thing to come away with control when you win a faceoff clean. But how many games, Logan, if you really break it down, are decided because, as they did on that goal you're referring to, when a 50-50 puck battle, when the draw is kind of sawed off, or, you know, it goes towards one winger, set of wingers, or the other set of people on the other side of the circle, now who gets it? And now who controls it? So, yes. And, you know, you talk about faceoffs, not to get away from your question, Michael Backlund, who scores the winning goal, I always feel, to a certain extent, not completely, because there are just some guys who are so good at taking faceoffs and winning them, and, you know, you find most of those guys, Bergeron, O'Reilly, you know, go on down the ledger. It's not a surprise that those guys are near the top. You know, Couturier, when healthy, has been another one of those guys. But when the numbers are higher, and Michael Backlund has been superb in his game, and it starts with the drop of the puck. I think I don't have the sheet in front of me, Logan, but I think at one point I looked, he was over 70%. He was certainly over 60% in the game against the Oilers. That tells me sometimes about your level of engagement. 50-50 puck battles are massive. That one starts every single play. And it's not just about the centerman, but I always think there's some synergy between center ice players' engagement and how they do in the face-off. If they're around where they normally are on a regular basis, fine. But if they're higher or they have a really low night, engagement certainly comes to mind for me.
Chatting with Peter Labardius, our Flames insider here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. The Calgary Flames 3-0 for the first time since 2010 after a 3-2 victory over the Vegas Golden Knights last night, Lou. And we talked about the team's adversity or facing adversity last night and, you know, sort of bouncing back in that game after a shaky start. Well, one of the guys that had that shaky start was Jacob Markstrom. That first goal by William Carrier catches a piece of his glove, but really just a miss on it by Markstrom. And hey, that happens. The best goaltenders in the world will, you know, let in the occasional bad goal. But I thought he really bounced back after the Howden tip. I thought was a very sneaky goal from in close by Howden. It was a good tip there. But, you know, again, Jacob showing some mental strength there after a bad goal, not letting it derail his entire night. He was the backbone that the team needed to help them on that comeback trail.
There's lots of different ways that a goalie can have quality nights. But one part of it that I value as much as any is how you bounce back from some adversity. But more importantly, what do you do at the time of a game where it's going to swing? You look at last night, 2-0. Just felt right there. You need to shut the door. I didn't know that maybe he'd need to shut it for the rest of the night. But what he has done, while it has not been perfect with the two opening goals that he's given up in his first two starts, when Jacob Markstrom has had to either keep his team in the right place or make key saves as he did down the stretch, you know, when things got dicey against Colorado, and the same could be said about last night, that's a mark of great goaltending. Who gives you a chance to win, and who makes saves when you need saves the most? Yes, it wasn't easy for the group to have the first one go in, and you're right, it was a sneaky little crafty tip by the former Moose Jaw Warrior, Brett Howden, to make it 2-0. That's really good goaltending, though, when you just slam it shut the rest of the way to give yourself and your team a chance to win a hockey game.
So now for the Calgary Flames, looking forward towards the their next opponent, the Buffalo Sabres, in town tomorrow.
Never been more excited to see the Sabres than tomorrow.
A very interesting group.
I'm not kidding.
No, it's not the down-and-out Sabres of a couple of years ago, Lou. They've got some very interesting pieces that I'm looking forward to looking at in person tomorrow as well. But the Flames back at practice today, and interesting again that Noah Hanifin misses another day of practice for the Flames. It's become a bit of a common theme the last couple of days, and wondering if maybe Noah's battling something that's limiting his practice time right now.
Well, today was more concerning for me than it was on Tuesday, because when I watch a practice, there's a couple things that I think are keys to whether a guy might be nicked up. So, for example, on Tuesday or on Monday leading into Tuesday, Connor Mackey was in a spot as a placeholder. But today, like, he was paired in practice with Rasmus Anderson. That, to me, didn't set off alarm bells. Not that I have alarm bells now, but I saw two things today that would make me certainly wonder whether Noah's going to play tomorrow, and that is Rasmus Anderson was paired today with Nikita Zadorov. That's different. Connor Mackey paired with Michael Stone. And then in the late stages of the practice, you know, Michael Stone was taking some power play reps in a spot where Noah Hanifin would normally be found. So I don't want to read too much. I know that there's a bit of a bug going through the group a little bit right now. And, you know, hopefully it's just a situation. But you know what it's like, Logan, right? We've all been sick. So you know what really helps you when you're sick? Rest.
Mm-hmm.
Playing a 60-minute NHL hockey game and playing more than 20 minutes in it, probably just the minute you start to feel a little better, now you run yourself right down again. So hopefully it's more of that than a nick, but you'll take a nick. You just don't want anything long term. And, you know, today in the league, as you know, we saw a couple of very, very important players in Karen Ekblad and Gabriel Landeskog. I don't think they're going to be playing anytime soon.
No, bad news for those teams for sure. And before we let you go here, Lou wanted to play this clip from Ryan Huska. He did the media availability for the coaches today, and you know, talked about something we've chatted about a lot here, and some of the new guys and the, you know, vocal leadership that's come from this group. And just wanted to play this clip from earlier today that you've already heard, Lou, but good to share with the listeners before we let you go today.
I think they fit in really well. And the one cool part about the three of them, they're all vocal. So we have more conversations now between our players than we have in the past, which I think that comes with maturity and older players for sure, but a little bit of experience, as we talked about with the first couple questions. Like, Cads understands you have to really have a connection with people you're on the ice with. So if they don't like the way something's done, there's a lot of communication going on right now. And a lot of those guys have brought that in, and it's making the guys that were here in the past be a part of that as well. So that's something that's been a noticeable difference, that we're a much more vocal team in behind the scenes, I guess I could say.
I think it's really important, and here's why. The other thing that Ryan Huska talked about is it's a sign of what? Engagement. If you are constantly engaged enough to be conversing with your teammates, talking about how you're going to do things better or try to do things better, you are more engaged in the process and what you do on the ice. And I'll say it flat out about Calgary Flames teams in years gone by. And this doesn't come from me. This comes from, you know, I'll just use Jeff Ward as an example. I'll never forget the night he sat in our room after a game and said, this group has to get better at not only asking more of one another, but demanding it and expecting it. And this coach has a standard that no one is absent from, but to have those types of players that are invested, engaged, the way they communicate. I can see every practice, every night when I can see Nazem Kadri on the bench, like, he is all in. And he looks like he's a guy who's relishing more of a leadership role, trying to make a difference with his two line mates. It's not always for everybody, but if you're one of the younger guys in any situation and you're with a veteran guy who's been there and been to a place you've never been before, it's great that you just want to soak all that up, learn collaboration, communication, engagement. That's good teamwork, and it's massively important.
Lou, thanks for joining us as always. Appreciate it, pal. We'll talk to you tomorrow. We'll talk a little Buffalo Sabres and get set for another
Flames
game day, sir.
Power, Darlene, Cousins, Krebs. You got a bit of a soft spot for the Sabres. Okay, have a good afternoon.
See you, Lou. There you go. Our Flames insider, P. Labardius, brought to you by the Gemini Group. Home renovations, your home renovations should be a reflection of who you are. Give your home the Gemini difference. The Gemini Group now offering Air Miles, Reward Miles. Visit GeminiGroup.ca. Peter Labardius joining us here, and usually joins us on Flames Radio, but last night got the call up to do color alongside with Han Ryan Singh, who did play-by-play. And by all accounts, pretty tremendous night for Lou. He's done the TV side of things before, but hasn't always done the color side of things. So very happy Lou got that opportunity last night. And sounds like he sure enjoyed himself. I know a lot of people texted in and said they enjoyed hearing him on the call. So good on Lou. Great to see one of our teammates succeeding and having some success on the TV side of things. We'll take a break, come back on the other side. Lots to get to in segment two of Sportsnet today. Lou mentioned some major injuries around the NHL. We'll dive into that. A couple captains going down long-term in two different spots. Plus, some news ahead of the Calgary Stampeders and the Saskatchewan Roughriders. It sounds as though they're talking about, or Cody Fajardo at least was talking like his time in Saskatchewan was done, as Mason Fine is said to get the start for the Saskatchewan Roughriders Saturday against the Stampeders. We'll dive into that and get you a Stamps report with Matty Rose. That's coming up next here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Talked a lot of Calgary Flames there in the opening segment with Peter Labardius, as we always do. But that's not the only piece of Flames news, or at least Flames-related news, to pass your way today. The City of Calgary and Calgary Sports Entertainment Corp. announced today that they are restarting formal arena negotiations. Of course, our pal Ryan Pike, who joins Pat Steinberg in the 5 o'clock hour, will have more on this. But this is what Ryan had on Twitter a little bit earlier today. After months of having the appointed third party acting as an envoy of sorts between the two sides, the city and CSEC are heading back to the table. Is the restart of talks significant? Yes, very much so. But it's not a deal, mind you. You don't bother with this part of the process if the informal communications weren't positive. So, potential good news. But I want your thoughts on it at 960-960, because we've been down this path before. We were very close to breaking ground on a new arena for the Calgary Flames, a new event center, before the city and CSEC had talks break off. Many of you will remember Jody Gondak, the mayor here, with a thread on Twitter about her view of the negotiations. The sides went their separate ways and eventually brought in a third party to sort of restart the process between the two. I don't think this was ever a case of when those talks ended that the organization was legitimately looking at moving. But I think it was certainly a kick in the gut for all the work that had gone into getting talks as far as they were last year. Because I don't want to misconstrue it. To even get to the point where they were, as close as they were to, you know, finally signing off on things and getting shovels in the ground, there's a lot of work that goes into that. Especially when it's split between the city and CSEC. Everybody's got to go through the process of looking over everything, making sure that the money adds up, dotting the I's, crossing the T's, all that sort of thing. So while it's good news today, it's not a guarantee of anything. I do agree with what Ryan says there, in that I don't think you bother announcing this if it's not going in a positive direction. So that's good. But we've also been down this road before, and there will be people that are vehemently opposed to the city having anything to do with this and money from the city being involved in that project, and that's fine. You're able to have that opinion, but it certainly looks like that's the road they're going to go down. So I guess the question becomes, what does this look like? We remember what it looked like when the initial thought process was Calgary next. Now, that never really got off the ground. we were starting to get renderings and an idea of location, seating, all that sort of stuff for the last one. So are we simply picking up talks based on what they had before, or are we looking at something completely different, maybe something that's bigger, maybe something that's smaller and not quite as scaled up as the last project was? I don't know. I think a lot of this will be answered over the next couple of months. It's obviously something that we have a vested interest here at Sportsnet 960, The Fan. But, again, I think for many people that, you know, even people that went to the Saddle Dome last night, they'll be happy to know that perhaps this is on the horizon again. I don't know that, again, I don't know that it means anything is imminent. But if you're on the side of, hey, it's time to get this city a proper building, a proper event center for concerts, sporting events, et cetera, et cetera, you're probably pretty happy today. And don't forget, the Calgary Wranglers are now in town too. A lot of their day-to-day operations currently are handled at Winsport, and that facility is more than capable of hosting an organization like the Calgary Wranglers, but their games get played at the Saddle Dome. And I imagine the Flames would like to make the process as smooth as possible for them to have a spot in the new place. The Roughnecks still reside here. The Hitmen are still here. It's a busy building when you add in concerts, events, and everything else. Perhaps some good news? I don't know. Ryan will have more about this later on in Flames Talk when he joins Pat at 5, but just wanted to pass that news along and see what a few people thought. 960-960, the fan feedback line. It's always open to you. Here we go. As usual, I figured it would be split. This text says, if it's anything like the Ring Road, it's 10 years too late. Yeah, you're not wrong. Mitch texted in saying, new building way overdue. You need it for the economic benefit. I mean, that's one that I don't think anybody can argue with, too. I think that, you know, potentially revitalizing a part of the city, the work that comes with building a new arena is something that a lot of people see as a major benefit to all of this. Both sides, this text says, both sides, CSEC and the city need to operate in good faith and with commitment. Does the potential long-term success of this team tip the scale? I think you generally operate building discussions as an aside to what the team's doing. How do I want to phrase this? I think as long as attendance is strong and you know that support is going to be there at the new building, I don't think you worry about that. I think that the success or ups and downs of a team day to day, year to year, kind of has to take a back seat because it's going to take a couple of years for this to happen. There's no guarantee that in, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, when we're, fingers crossed, hopefully cutting the ribbon on a new arena, that the team is where they are now. So I think you have to kind of, you know, play that to a side. Not that it's irrelevant, but I think that it's part of it. If you've got the fan support, the rest of it will come. This text says, having a third party is a good thing. This will hopefully take them to completion. Yeah, after the way that this last one ended, I don't think there was any choice but to have a third party in it. Both sides felt scorned by the other side. But at the end of the day, I think you both want the deal done. So sometimes, I don't want to say it takes an adult in the room to get things together, but that's kind of how it feels sometimes. This text says, why bother with the city? The city bargained in bad faith. Any building on city land will have no parking, no parking revenue. Partner with the Soutina Nation and build where the Grey Eagle is. If not, there's nothing more attractive to Houston than a contender. I don't think they're going to Houston. with all due respect, as contentious as this has been at times, I don't think Murray Edwards and the Flames ownership group truly have any intention of leaving the city. I know that that's a fun thing to say, and it's one that raises eyebrows when it comes to headlines and tweets and all that sort of thing, but I don't think they have any real appetite to move out of the city of Calgary. The fan base here in Calgary, you guys listening, support the team as well as any organization, any fan base does in the NHL. There's no guarantee that it works as well in Houston as it does here. Maybe you have more building options, and maybe in a U.S. economy you have a bit more freedom to do what you want and scale it up bigger. But I don't think that going to Houston guarantees you the fan base and the support that you have here in Calgary. That's the biggest part of making any of this work. There's no fans here. It doesn't matter. You get 10,000 fans showing up in Houston. Who cares? You built a billion-dollar stadium and no one shows up? Well, then you're a loser in that proposal. I really don't think that, again, you can say that all the time. And it's great for grabbing headlines, but I don't think that and maybe it'll come up again if this gets messy. I don't know, but I really don't think they're going. I think they can say that, and it sounds good in negotiations. Well, if you don't give us what we want, we're just going to go somewhere else. That's easier said than done. This text says, there's nothing wrong with the Saddle Dome. Enjoy paying $50 at the concession stands for mediocre food in Edmonton. Text line 960-960, lots on this here, as I expected there would be. This text says, it's not just the Saddle Dome, yes, that's number one, but all Calgary sports venues need to be updated. McMahon Stadium, the old Burns Baseball Stadium, the lack of a field house, world-class city with second-class sports venues except for Spruce Meadows. Now, interesting that the bubble did go up at Schold Ice, I believe, for some indoor field house events over the winter, which will be big for teams like the Calgary Stampeders, but I really don't disagree with that text. There's a lot that plays out in this city as far as great sporting opportunities, and as much as we want to get into the debate over the Saddle Dome, McMahon Stadium is still a problem and one that doesn't appear to have a solution on the horizon. Maybe this new negotiation with the city includes something to do with a field house. I don't know. We're way too early for that. But I know a lot of people have been clamoring for that and wondered if this restart wasn't a chance to bring that back into the conversation. This one says, this is from Jared in Lethbridge, I'd be surprised by them telling us the deal is done rather than them talking again. Take a page from Brad's handbook and just announce signings. Too much negotiations through the media. Yeah, Jared, I don't disagree with that. When it comes to this sort of thing, both sides will use whatever is at their means to try to adjust the perception of the public, and sometimes that gets away from the overall message. And the message is that we need a better sports facility here in Calgary. So figure that out. And do so in good faith, but a lot of people, and rightly so, I don't disagree with everybody here that's saying I don't trust the city or I don't trust either side to negotiate in good faith. Because at the end of the day, you are kind of out for yourself, but you need the other one to get where you're going. I get it. Last one on this, and then we'll move on. This text says, I certainly hope that every text that has come through complaining about facility upgrades remembers we had an opportunity to have a lot of this infrastructure already in place with an Olympic bid that was passed on. I hope people keep that in mind. The Olympic one, I'd have to go back. I don't know how much that would have changed this conversation. I think it would have been an interesting one for the hockey side of things. But I think the problem that people, if I remember correctly, and I might be wrong on this, but I think a lot of things that bug people about the Olympic bid when it came down to voting on it was that the details were kind of iffy on what exactly those facility upgrades looked like. You can say we're going to spend X amount of dollars, but how does it all get spread out? It's very hard to hand over a blank check to something like an Olympic thing where you're going to need a lot of money for a lot of different things. I can't remember enough. I have to go back and look at that Olympic conversation. That's an interesting text because I can't remember how specific they were on certain things. I don't know if that would have covered what some of the fans in this city were looking for, but maybe. Thank you for the text. 960-960. The fan feedback line always open to you here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Wanted to pass this along before we get to our Stamps report with Matt Rose. A couple of key injuries in the NHL today. Bad news for the reigning Stanley Cup champions. Gabe Landeskog out 12 weeks with knee surgery undergone today. Hasn't played a game this season. Turns 30 in November. Had a previous knee procedure in March that caused him to miss the rest of the regular season, but he returned for the playoffs and helped the Avs to a Stanley Cup. That puts Landeskog on LTIR, and the club will use his $7 million salary in cap relief while he remains out of the lineup. And we talked about it a bit on Hockey Central with Haley Salvin a bit earlier. Florida Panthers are going to be without Aaron Ekblad for the foreseeable future. He's headed to LTIR. That, according to GM Bill Zito today. He left Monday's loss to the Bruins with what was called a lower body injury. He has had just some brutal injury luck the last three seasons. You might remember he was stretchered off during a game back in March of 2021. Missed the rest of that year, only playing 35 of 56 games. Then last March, he had another leg injury and missed the rest of that season before returning in the playoffs. Zito did say he'll be back. It's not a season-ending thing, and they think he'll be back at 100%. But as of right now, no timeline for Ekblad, so that's a major blow to a Florida Panthers team that's already still trying to adjust to losing Mackenzie Weegar and others on their decor this year. So that's the NHL news from today. Want to make sure to get this in. As always, the Stamps Report with Matty Rose. He's getting you set for the Stampeders and the Rough Riders. They are in action on Saturday when they take on the Rough Riders in Regina. It's time for your Wednesday edition of the Stamps Report.
The Stampeders held a closed practice on Wednesday ahead of their game against the Riders Saturday night. The team is gearing up for these final two games of the regular season, both against Saskatchewan, a home-and-home to close it out. First time facing the Riders all year as well, which is weird in its own sense, but alas, can only play the schedule that is in front of you. Interesting reports out of Saskatchewan. Mason Fine taking starting reps over Cody Fajardo at practice Tuesday and Wednesday ahead of what could be a must-win game for the Riders. Danny Austin of Post Media asked the head coach about those reports out of Regina.
I know he plays for the Riders, so I don't know a ton else. I mean, I've watched enough of him. I'm not going to give away what I think he is, but I know he's a professional quarterback, and you know, obviously they have some confidence. He's played in some games, so if he goes, we got to try to stop him.
Attention to sort of, you know, there are media reports that he's starting, he's not.
Yeah. Yes, but I'm not going to try to read between the lines because it's a team, it's a system. You know, they're going to try to establish ways to win the game on all three phases, and we have to be prepared for that.
So we shall see, a smokescreen or not. This game does have a varying level of playoff implications for the Riders. It'll depend on how the Tiger Cats fare against the Red Blacks Friday night. Whoever the quarterback is for Saskatchewan, they'll need to be fleet of foot if the Riders' O-line performs at the level that it has been at all season long. They've allowed a league-high 66 sacks through 16 games, averaging 4.125 per. Next most is Edmonton with 52. That's 10 less. And then the Alouettes and Argos have both allowed 42. Side note, the Stamps are first in the CFL with 45 sacks recorded. So controlling the line of scrimmage should be in Calgary's favor.
Yeah, I just try to control the line of scrimmage. I mean, you know, I hope we can put him into obvious passing situations because that's when you get your sacks. A lot of the sacks come when they're behind, that sort of stuff. So those would be good things for us if we could control the line of scrimmage on first down, put them in long yardage, and hopefully get a lead.
Stefan Lemon leads the Stampeders with 13 sacks. That ties a career high that he set in 2016 with Toronto. Pressure leads to sacks and turnovers. The Riders have committed 40 through this portion of the season, third worst in the league. The Stamps have forced 42 turnovers, which is second only to Toronto's 43. Two of those turnovers for Calgary are interceptions by defensive back Brad Muhammad. It's his second year in the CFL. He's been playing the field halfback position for much of it with the Stampeders. He's been a mainstay. He didn't play in week one, but he's been in every game since, playing with several different teammates, but he himself being available. He's also tied for third with 9 pass knockdowns this season. So only 2 interceptions, but he's been close on several others. I had a chance to catch up with the 27-year-old from St. Petersburg, Florida, after the closed practice. We're here with Brad Muhammad, getting set for the last couple of games. You're facing the Riders twice. Now, not your first year in the CFL, not your first time facing the Riders, but first time facing them as a Stamp. It's a little bit different going into Mosaic. What's the feeling around the team as you get ready for this first matchup with the Riders?
Well, we just want to make sure we're detail-oriented and that we're making sure we're on top of our assignments and we're assignment sound and just getting better by the week. We know Riders, they're a good football team. They have a lot of vets. They have a good quarterback. And we just want to make sure that we execute what we got to do and get a strong push going into playoffs.
You know that your front can create a lot of pressure. When that is on the table, how does that affect how you guys are going to play the game? Is there a balance between being over-aggressive and kind of understanding the game plan? Do you have to balance that at all?
Well, not really. Once we're doing taking care of the game plan, the DBs are making sure that we're over top, and we just let our front eat up. The game actually becomes pretty easy once we're making sure that we're taking care of everything. We have a great defensive front. They do a great job rushing the quarterback, and they make it easier for the back end. So,
you guys dealt with a lot of injuries to their secondary over the course of the year, like a lot of injuries, a lot of moving parts, playing different positions. How did that help this group grow and get better as the year went on and be prepared for the playoffs?
Well, I would think it built chemistry in the back end. It forced us to talk to guys that we wouldn't usually talk to. I mean, we're a tight group, so we talk to each other, but build those strong connections with guys that would usually be on the other side of the field now that that everybody had to move around. So when we're out there and we're getting different situations, we're really like one unit out there. Everybody, we can look each other eyes and know that we're all on the same page. So it was tremendous help.
Is there anybody in the second year that you've maybe come extra close with, you know, maybe even off the field? Because like you said, you guys are a tight-knit group, and I'm sure that some guys, you got, you know, some shared similarities, some things like that.
Yeah, I know me and Tremaine Washington, we have become very, very close. We're both from the South Florida area. Also, Moxie's from that area. And actually, a lot of guys are from South Florida, but guys that I've gotten pretty close with, which is pretty hard to single out just one, but I would have to say either Tremaine or Deontay Ruffin, those two guys.
How's that going to help you as you get ready for the playoffs?
Anybody could play at any moment, and just like you say, building that chemistry with each other, it makes us a tight group. And as you can see these past 3 games, the statistics we've been putting out and those results we've been getting, we can be a very locked-down group once we get in our groove.
This week, we could find out where you guys are playing for the West Division 7. We know you're playing the Lions. How much scoreboard watching have you been doing over the last little bit?
Man, since our rookie showcase, this team knew we had a pretty special group. So we've been going through our ups and downs trying to get it right. But at the core of our belief, we know that we have a very solid team. So however the chips may fall, I'm not really paying too much attention to it. Like, we just focus, making sure we're focusing on making sure our team getting stronger towards the end of the year as it gets colder towards playoffs, and making sure that we're peaking at the right time. And it's going to be a tough match for anybody that has to see the Calgary Stampeders.
Best of luck, Brad.
Thank you, sir.
Talked about gelling with teammates, with defensive back Brad Muhammad there at the end. It was something that Dave Dickinson was asked about after the practice as well. Not just the on-field bonding, but the off-field bonding as well.
Kind of what happens, I think, is that when you have bye weeks, you get away from your group, you get away from it. And, you know, sometimes, like in all relationships, a little time away is not horrible. But you do have to come back and kind of get back into your groove and your schedule and get back to why you're here. I think that's important that we all understand we're trying to go after a common goal and create a bit of a legacy and to get our name on a cup. So As far as the guys, yeah, off the field stuff, we're still trying to be pretty diligent, keeping guys as healthy as possible. But ultimately, yeah, they got to live and they got to make sure they enjoy hanging around each other.
Only a couple of weeks left in the regular season. It's about being on the same page and taking care of the details. Dave Dickinson talked about the details Tuesday, mentioned it in the Stamps Report Tuesday afternoon as well. Then the head coach joined George Russick and I on the big show. He does so every Wednesday morning. We've dived into accountability and focusing on those details in these final couple of weeks with head coach Dave Dickinson.
Dave, at practice on Tuesday, we talked about the focus on details for these final weeks of the season. And listen, sometimes, not even just as players, but as humans, you can hear the same voice for an extended amount of time, say, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 months. Not yours, obviously, but in other situations, it can sometimes get a little bit stale. So how important is it to kind of lean on your veterans to make sure that everybody is staying accountable in these situations when sometimes the message can tire a little bit as the season goes on?
Yeah, I try to be consistent, you know, and I listen. I take notes from other coaches. I try to read a little bit and other people that I respect. But you're right. I mean, you can't continually say the same thing. Hey, we got to be better. We got to be better. After a while, that's just they're not listening. And find a way to kind of make it fresh. Find a way to make it personal for them. And then also, I think guys will respond to you if they feel you've got a little bit more of their interest rather than just football interest, meaning you care about them as a person, and you know them a little bit. There's trust that's starting to go into that. So it's a challenge. There's no doubt about it. And I look back at some of my mentors and Wally and obviously Huff and some of the other coaches I was around a long time. And you know, we as players used to like count sayings from Wally. We'd have a over under on you knows. That's what you know, men and it was kind of comical at times. And yet, I don't really remember a lot of like coaches firing me up or listening to a speech of theirs that changed the way I approached the game. But I did think I was always kind of personally or self motivated. And I really didn't think I needed that. I was more afraid of failure. I wanted to make sure every time I was on the field, I gave it everything I had, and that I represented my last name and made people proud. So I don't know if I really needed that. Versus some guys might lose focus here or there and need that coach to kind of keep them in line or help them with that extra motivation. So it's all a different philosophy, and like you say, you do your best with what you got, but I think it's important as a coach, you just be yourself, be genuine, what you're saying you believe in, hopefully the guys see that.
You may, and very much look forward to that. Closed practice, so we await the latest injury report from the Calgary Stampeders. We did see Titus Wall limited on Tuesday, so that was a good sign. The Stamps were also missing Kadeem Carey and Peyton Logan, but Dave Dickinson told us that both were able to participate in the session after the Wednesday closed practice. Thursday, the final practice in town, then they'll hop on a plane to Regina to battle the Riders Saturday night at 5 o'clock. With your Stampeders report, I'm Matt Rose.
Thank you, Matty. Appreciate it. Matt, part of the big show in the morning with Rustic and Rose every single day here on Sportsnet 960 from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. or wherever you get your podcasts. We got to get out of here. The Hockey PDO Cast with Dmitry Filipovich is next here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.